Blog Talk Radio.
Let's do it. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh. 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 Oh yeah. It's Empowerment Saturday. 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's your main man, Marvin Rohn, and a crew coming to you live. Oh, we got the introduction to the Moors featuring Brother George. We got our Kwanzaa segment coming up today and much, much more. Stand by. It's on the way. Oh, yeah. Better love. Oh, yeah. There is no greater. Listen to me, brothers and sisters. There is no better. No better love than for self and kind. It's African American Empowerment Saturday. It's 365 days of empowerment and motivation for the brothers and the sisters. Why you say that, Marvin Rohn? Because we need it, right? When you look around and you see the disposition that many of us are in. And again, until all of us are free, none of us are free. I'm saying that again, just in case you missed it. Until all of us are free, none of us are free. What do you mean, Marv? Hey, listen, brothers and sisters, African-American empowerment is what it actually says it is. We need motivation. We need empowerment. When you look around at the African-American community, many of the families that you and me and you and I come from and the communities that our people live in, then you see it for what it is, right? We're not perfect, but we got some work to do on ourselves, on our families, and on our communities. And if you want to continue to ignore that fact, go right ahead. But there will be a constant reminder every Saturday at 2 p.m. and then every day that you are on this earth and you're a person of color, the reminders are going to come, and you can't continue to ignore the fact that we need help. And what we really need to do is help ourselves first. The condition is real. The mindset is real. The mentality is real, and we're going to have to collectively do something about it. What can you do is the question first. I have a proposal that we as a collective, but we got to do the work individually, begin to do this work. You need a political agenda. You have to understand, if you are civilized in America, you need this agenda. A political agenda, or a political agenda. You have to understand and manage the politics in your area. Get involved. Understand how the politics work and how you can shift the agendas when you start playing the game, right? Again, I'm saying understand the politics for resources, right? Control for power. I'm talking power now, right? And in order to understand the position that we're in, we're going to have to understand how to utilize power within the system. Now, some of the brothers would be, well, why are you trying to adopt this? I'm not. I'm just trying to manage and maintain the condition of the situation that our people are in. And you can use politics to change that as much as you can. Now, I must make this clear. If you want to leave, start making plans and reservations to go somewhere else. And when you get there, try to set up infrastructure that our people can come and have a nice place to live until such time. You need a political agenda and an economic platform in order to exercise those agendas, because you need politics to get the resources to create the institutions that define our own reality. We're going to have to do that. We're going to have that agenda that really looks at understanding capitalism for what it is, right? And understanding how important it is that we understand how to manipulate the capitalistic system to work for us. Now, as a body, we have the resources to do it, but why don't we have institutions and Fortune 500 companies owned and operated by African Americans for African Americans, where we can hire our young people who are attending HBCUs and PWIs, that we can employ them, and that then we can create jobs and opportunities for our young people to have sustainability. And when we understand the economic platform, then we can use the resources to invest, right, in ourselves. And that means creating an infrastructure where we can live comfortably and not struggle. It's the A. Athletics is health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition. Mental health, physical health, and emotional health, because you're going to have to take care of your body and your mind. You're going to have to cover and protect your mind and your body. Again, you're going to have to do the health things. You're going to have a health agenda, a health and wellness agenda where you take care of your body, your temple, your mind, your spirit, and you're going to have to be able to take some time to work on yourself, right? Get away from the table. Stop eating and munching and crunching so much and get a really good, solid workout routine and a regimen that's going to work for you. Next, you're going to have to do the hard work of managing your diet, getting a really healthy fitness plan. And for those who need mental health support, you're going to have to go and get it. You just do. You really do. You're going to have to get the support you need to manage the disposition that you're in. You need help. If you need help, get help, right? Go and seek help where it is. Next is C, relevant cultural programs to help us feel good about ourselves, to help us navigate the system, to help us get better at doing what it is that we do, and that's being ourselves if we know how to be ourselves. Culture does that. Culture is a roadmap. Culture is the guardrail. Guard yourself, right, in a way in which you start to teach your young people how important culture is, particularly African-American culture, right, particularly, specifically, more or less. And we're talking about basic principles to live by. What are the principles that you live by? And lastly is education, a comprehensive education that really looks at being well-rounded, right? No more getting in to fit in. Do your best to improve yourself right where you are and then bring somebody else along. This is Stan back in a moment. Man, Stan, your neck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah, man, we got this deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
You know, brothers and sisters, Brother Stan is not with us, but he's exactly right. Those institutions are very important to help develop your children and your family. We need family ties. We need family bonds. We need parents. We need great parents. And we're going to have to be the ones to do that. It's just as simple as that. We're going to have to restructure, reorient, and reorganize our communities and our families. Who else is going to do that work but us? We're going to have to do that work, and we're going to have to create institutions, whether that's daycares, whether that's early learning opportunities, every opportunity we can to invest in our young people and our families and our communities, we should be doing it, and we should do that well. And now, Brother George is going to come in for the Kwanzaa segment. Brother George, here we go. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Hey, mama. Brother George, are you there?
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, brother, and good afternoon to everyone else. How you doing today?
Good afternoon. Hey, I'm doing great today, man. I'm excited, right? I'm looking forward to today's show. You know, we're going to do an introduction to the Moors featuring Brother George. That's right. That's you. And I can't wait, man. I'm excited about that. But also, man, it's an opportunity for my brother to be showcased today, because you, again, I tell everybody that know me, Brother George introduced me to culture. He introduced me to African-American and African education, and it's the best education that money could not buy. Couldn't buy it. It's the best thing that ever happened to me. So anyway, Brother George, take it away, sir.
Yes, sir. Okay, today's Kwanzaa principle is Imani, faith. To believe with all our heart in our parents, our teachers, our leaders, our people, and the righteousness far by Imani, faith. This far by faith, this far of our mothers and this faith of our mother and fathers, Martin, Malcolm, Sojourner Truth, was not in images or doctrines, but in a person, in a personal relationship with a force that was greater than themselves and yet was also within them. We each need to develop and strengthen our personal relationship with whatever we hold as a higher power in our lives, calling upon the great spiritual heritage of our mother continent to invigorate and sustain us in all aspects of our being. And that's the Kwanzaa principle for today. I can feel that spirit that's being referred to in Imani today. The willingness segment, as always, is supposed to be an educational segment because willingness was designed for us to be a contradiction of ourselves. And so what I try to do is I try to reverse that and make us the perfect image of ourselves, of what we're supposed to be, of the learned, scientific-minded people that we are in this country. And I would like to give it back to Brother Marvin for a brief moment, you know, just in case he wanted to ask me a question about one thing or another, and then I'll move into the introduction to the Morse. Back to you.
All right. Thank you, Brother George. Real quick, that faith piece, right? How important is faith, right, in each other and in ourselves toward the goal of recollecting or reconstruction of ourselves and our minds, right? How does that faith work, man, in your opinion?
Well, it works exactly the way the Bible says. Faith is the substance of things hope for, the evidence of things unseen. And the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan used to use a great example. He said, when you put the baby for the first time on the mother's breast, they don't know that milk is going to come out of there. But it's faith that they just keep on pulling and keep on pulling. And finally, the same thing that we have to have as a group of people. We got to have faith as strong as the faith of our ancestors that we're going to get through this and get to the other side and get back to our rightful place in human history. That's my definition of what I think the importance of faith is for us, brother.
Thank you, Brother George. And that's what we need, right? We need a good old super dose, a soup of faith. I'm asking you today to really look at how much faith we have in each other and how we can begin to build that thing again, right? And that thing that I'm talking about is belief in each other, belief in ourselves, right? Belief in who we were born to be. Belief in the strength that we have as a people to overcome the worst atrocities mankind has ever witnessed and experienced. I said ever. All of mankind has not been through what our ancestors and what we have gone through in this country. No other group of people has stood in the face of that amount of violence, that amount of hatred, and stood in the midst of it and continue to grow and continue to develop and continue to invent. Yes, it's you, mighty people. You are the ones that stood in the face of hatred, hurt, pain, violence, and suffering. You were the ones that survived the Holocaust, the great Holocaust. Your ancestors are the ones that we now represent. And my question is, in that faith, what are you doing with your freedom? I'm going to say that again. Ask yourself, if you are listening to this right now, what am I doing with my freedom? I'm challenging you right now. to want to make a difference. Start with yourself first, then your family, and then your community. If you would be willing to do the work of working on yourself, your mindset, your mentality, and do the work and commit to it, have faith in the process that we've been brought through. We're working to get to the other side now. Now all we have to do is reconstruct the mind and the heart to appreciate what it is that we now have to offer, and the way will be made. It's all up to us now. The hardest part is over. But that work that we need to do to reconstruct our mind is next. Are you up to the challenge to do the work of working on yourself mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually? You got to do the work. You got to commit to it. And you got to get to that work right now. Now it's time for Brother George and his lecture on Introduction to the Moors. I'm excited about this. Somebody call a friend. We're getting ready to get started with Brother George right now. Oh, yeah, you know how I'm doing it. Bring it on in. Brother George, bring it, brother.
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah.
Bring it. What?
Brother George is here. He's giving us an introduction to the Moors. I turn it over to you, Brother George. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you so much.
Thank you, Brother Marvin, and thank you for the opportunity to share one of the subjects that I think are very crucial to our people. And that is, what was our immediate history before the enslavement period? And based on the evidence that I have researched and different of our teachers and educators have come up with, is that the African American is the remnants of the Great Moorish Empire. I'm not saying that there are no other portions that exist, but our portion experienced something that was, as Brother Marvin said earlier, was very devastating, very different than our brothers and sisters on the African continent. Now, I want to start at the beginning of what set me on this path in the first place. When I joined the Nation of Islam, a follower of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, under the direction of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, within the teachings of the minister, he would teach the teachings, and it would come across so clear. But one day, he mentioned something that I thought was significant, but it was kind of strange, because he told us, you know, that we should learn and we should study people like Dr. Clark and Dr. Bent. And a lot of times I listen to Dr. Clark and Dr. Bent, and they would talk very, you know, belittling of the minister, you know, like he was doing some things that wasn't correct. So I never heard him ever strike back at them about their views of what he was doing, because they were very good friends with Malcolm, and so I think that they blamed the nation for what happened to Malcolm. But at any rate, he told us that we should study those men. And so I ended up studying them along with Dr. Van Sertima, and I found my niche, Afrocentricity, you know, Afrocentric knowledge, learning about our people and as much historical evidence as I possibly could. So that was the beginning for me in this venture, in what I call most of my life's work. I consider myself a mentor and a teacher. And so today, I'm going to be talking about the most uncomfortable subject in the world. And the most uncomfortable subject in the world are the accomplishments of black people. Because once we start talking about what we did, then it's very obvious that the people who say that they did those things didn't do them. So that's what makes it so uncomfortable. That's what makes it today where they want to avoid talking about the historical past of this country in relationship to black people because of that fear. Won't be able to hit everything because we have a very, very rich history. We have the richest history of any people on the planet. So you can't cover that in one day. That's why I call it an introduction. Now I'm going to start with some groundwork, which is I want to talk about how man, you know, how we develop in our environment to come through of the sciences, the arts. What put us in that ability, the capability to do it on the continent of Africa? Now, I'm going to start with the six developmental stages or evolutionary stages of mankind. The first stage was Australopithecus robustus, was Australopithecus gracile. Now, the one that begins to be the most impacted is Homo habilis. Homo habilis is the first one to actually use what they call tools to like dig with a stick or take some sticks and tie them together to create a trail so that you could grow vegetation or grow fruits or whatever. It was the door opening to agriculture. Now, the next one is Homo erectus. This is when man stopped being bent over and stood up erect. Once man stood up erect and the information system could function better because he no longer was receiving just messages that were dealing with instructions like instant. He was receiving loads of information coming into his pineal gland. That's why you see the I in the middle of the head because it's implying the pineal gland. So from Homo erectus, that information started coming in so fast that it no longer was the information flow of instruction. It was the information flow that was overloading and it forced man to have to start thinking. And so you hit Homo sapiens. Now, once man started thinking and he started developing, he developed himself to get on another level of thinking, which is Homo sapiens sapiens. Now, those are the known six evolutionary stages of man. All of these took place in Africa before our ancestors ever left and went anywhere. Now, this seventh one is one that Brother Kaba Khomeini makes a good argument for us in this country, that because of what we experienced in the enslavement period of being the bottom round, and then our historical past of being the scientific-minded people of the world and our accomplishments, that because we was all the way low and all the way high, he feel like that we on a level of Homo sapiens, sapiens, sapiens. And I personally, I agree with Erie that he came up with. Now, if somebody could prove otherwise, then They'll get their chance. They'll get their chance to do it. Everything after man's initial six stages of evolution, everything after that was environmental adaptation. In other words, like where the Asian people get the slant eye is from their environment. Where the European gets his white skin in one aspect is from that cold environment. There are other theories that go that are with these, but for the most part, it was mostly environmental adaptations. It wasn't that they were evolving into a high level. Now, that's what's taught a lot of times. Now, the history that I'm talking about today, some may ask, well, was this history hidden? Where did all this information come from? I don't know nothing about this. How do I know you're right? You know, well, there were some people throughout history that talked about the rightness of my position today. One of them was a man by the name of Count Bonnet. And Count Bonnet wrote a book called Ruins of Empires, The Law of Nature. And in his book, Count Bonnet said, discovered while others were yet barbarians, the elements of the arts and sciences. A race of men now rejected, he wrote this in 1890, now rejected from society for their sable skin and frizzled hair, black skin and kinky hair, founded on the study of the laws of nature, those civil and religious systems which still govern the universe, in which standard authorities are cited, seems to prove that this statement is substantially correct and that we are in reality indebted to the ancient Ethiopians. And despite the Negro for the various religious systems, I'm sorry, let me back up. Ethiopians and the imagination of the persecuted and despised Negro for the various religious systems now so highly revered by the different branches of both the Semitic and Aryan races. He's talking about Christianity and Islam and Buddhism and the different religions that exist. That we started all of them. They all come from the same source. And so Count Bonnet spoke about that. Now, it's a theory that I also believe, but I want to tell you what William W. Howell said. He said he called it forbidden archaeology, represents much careful effort in critically assembling published materials. Most of us, mistakenly or not, see human evolution, man emerging rather late. To have modern human beings appearing a great deal earlier would be devastating to the whole theory of evolution. In other words, he's saying a lot of my European brethren have written these books that try to say that human civilization actually developed to its highest height and its last stage in Europe or Asia. But that's not what happened, because I just read you stages of the human being, and all of them took place in Africa. That's what he's talking about. And so now I want to move into the Moors. Now, most of us know about the history of the glamour of the Moors in Spain, the glory of the Moors in Spain and Portugal, really Iberia. And it was different. It was parts of Italy and France as well. But the way that the Moors ended up in Europe in the first place was you had these, it's easy for people to understand now after what happened to New Orleans. That one day New Orleans was a thriving, you know, working city, fine, the next day, devastating. Well, on the African continent, we experienced some things with sandstorms, and we experienced some things because we were the first to learn that it's not a good idea to farm land and then just move to another plot of land to farm. No, you got to do something to keep the nutrients in that soil. And so gradually, that's why so much desert it took place in Africa, because we had to learn that lesson. And so a part of what had us end up in the Iberian Peninsula was we needed land. We needed some land to grow, to build, to grow, mostly to grow crops. And so Europe had some fertile land. Now, the way that we ended up there was a count named Count Julian. Count Julian was at an outpost, and so his relationship with a governor by the name of General Tariq, they became friends. And so he knew that Tariq needed land, and he had experienced something with King Roderick, who was supposed to be his friend, had abused his daughter. He sent his daughter off to Spain to be educated, to go to school there and learn the ways of their people, because that's what people did. And so when he sent her there, she ended up getting raped by King Brown. He raped the guy's daughter, you know. So Count Julian, he's pissed off, and he don't know how to get him back, because, I mean, Roderick was a king and probably at that time had the largest army in the world. So how are you going to get this guy back? So he tells General Tariq what happened. And he also told him, you know, that land up there is very fertile and y'all need land, you know, so it's waiting there for the taking. So what Tariq did was he sent out a reconnaissance mission just to check out to see how big the, you know, the force was and what he might be up against if he decided to take it and what the land looked like and just, you know, to research everything. And the person that he sent was a general by the name of General General Tariq. Now, many of us in our world history class or geography class learned that, mostly world history class, learned that when you came into the ports of Spain back in the day, they had a tariff tax that you would have to pay. Does that sound familiar? General tariff tax. That's what those Europeans were talking about in the history class, but they just never told you that General Tariq was a black man. He was a Moor. So General Tariq went in, and he had about 400 men. He was doing that reconnaissance mission just to check out, just to see. And when he went in, it was open for the taking. Messenger back to General Tariq, and told him, this was easy. We took it. It's no problem. Yeah, but there was a problem. Because King Roderick had went north with his army to address another issue. So as soon as he got back, he took him on his way back to Africa. Running. So when he got back, he told General Tariq what happened. Hey, man, this guy got a huge army. He came back, and we didn't have no win. You know, our army was nowhere near the size, so we didn't have any win. So we had to vacate and come back. So we need to regroup, and if we're going to take this, you're going to need a pretty strong army. This was in about the year 710. And then I believe it was in 711 that General Tariq came back himself. And General Tariq had about 7,000 mostly African troops, because the militaries back then were made up of people that were, sometimes they were mercenaries. That's what they did for a living, was fight in wars for whoever would hire them out. But the majority of General Tariq's army was, Tariq was under Arab rule, because during that time was the rise of the Islamic Empire. Now, the Islamic Empire was broken up into two huge parts. It was the Ottoman Empire, and it was the Moorish Empire. They never talk about the Moorish Empire in history, but they do talk about the Ottomans, because they talk about the Ottoman Turks and all the area around it with Iran, Iraq, all of that was a part of the Ottoman Empire, which I believe they're trying to put back together today. How much success they'll have, I don't know. But the Ottoman Empire was much bigger than the Moorish Empire. Even though the Moorish Empire had some fearless fighters, we did not have the military strength of the Ottoman Empire. But it didn't matter at that time, because we was on the same side. So initially when Tariq went in, he went in and he fought one of the great battles of history. He had one of the greatest victories since Hannibal Barca in the world. It was true generalship, because people like Alexander, he won most of his battles just by the size of his army. He didn't really go into battle and have to fight, you know, in a struggle of the will. So General Tariq, when he took his army over, and so, you know, back then, the battles were fought on the battlefield. They weren't up in planes and jets and all that stuff, you know. It was man against man. It was your skills in battle against your enemy's skills in battle. And so General Tariq, he was building up his army on the beachheads of Spain. And so that night, just before sunrise, they seen, you know, Roderick's army was building up also, because you build up your forces and then they have a conversation and either they surrender or they go to war. So Tariq, he was not going to surrender. So that night, he realized that his men was outnumbered, and that they were, you know, they was like kind of questioning, you know, like, should we even try, you know, because they outnumber us like 6 or 7 to 1. And so that night, General Tyree got his generals and officers to burn the ships. So when they woke up in the morning, they seen the ship smoking in the Mediterranean Sea. And so the reason I say this is one of the great battles of history is because outnumbered probably 7 to 1, 7,000 troops against about 40,000. You let them know, you know, that, no, we're gonna fight. And so he turned around to his army and he said, before you is the enemy and behind you is the ships burning in the sea. And in so many words, he said, either we are going to fight to the death or we're going to run into the ocean. Who's going to follow me? And he took off on his horse. And the rest of his troops said, we will follow you, Tariq. And they followed him in the battle, and they won one of the most greatest battles in the history of man. And when they defeated Rising Sun, which was the Gulf, the people of Spain and Portugal, Iberia, cheering Tariq's army for defeating their army, because the Moors treated, eventually, the Moors' treatment was better than they were being treated by King Roderick. And so they, one of the things that they did, as soon as they came in, you know, they established, you know, a governmental system. And when they established the governmental system, they allowed the people to hold on to their religion. They didn't say, you got to become Islamic, you got to do this, got to do that. No, they didn't do that to the people. They allowed them to keep their religion and all of that. Hold on for a second, and I will. Well, they allowed for the, we're going to call them Spaniards. Now, they called the place Andalusia. I can't always pronounce that word properly. But it was called Andalusia. And that was the Iberian Peninsula, which was Spain, Portugal, parts of Italy and France. And the people who were there, they told them that they could run their own, they could have their own courts, they could deal with their own issues, and that they can continue to practice whatever religion that they wanted to. Now, they also gave them the option that if you decide that you will profess to Islam, then you'll be completely free to do anything in this country under our rule. And so there was a lot of Spaniards that became Islam. So once he was set up in Iberia, the first dynasty was the Umayyad dynasty. Now the Umayyad dynasty is some conflicting thoughts about the Moors in the first place, because we as a group of people were not jet black. So that in itself says that because we traveled the world, we also made it with other people. And so I think that a lot of the research is because when I was looking into who was writing on the Moors, who was really doing extensive work on the Moors, was mostly Dr. Alvin Van Sertima, because Dr. Bennett, Dr. Clark kind of stayed away from it. And I don't know if they felt like they needed to prove perfectly that the Moors were actually African and things of this nature. And so you have, to me, I think, and it's just my view, I think that when you start breaking down Tony Moores and Blackamoors and these different terms that they use for our people that were mostly on the north, in the northern part of Africa, northeast, across what you call the Maghreb, all the way to Morocco. They called all of those peoples Moors, right? Now, I think that about like Berbers, all of them had African in them. But I think that there was a distinction between whether your father was African or not. Because in Africa, you know, that we went based on your mother's line. In Europe and other places, they went based on who your father was. So when an Arab man married an African woman, then his son might be classified as a Berber because he was going to fight on the side of his father. That's how they infiltrated into Egypt in the first place. But now we're talking about Iberia now. So the same way today, I'm trying to make this make sense with our people because I don't like for our people to be not, you know, making sense out of not being able to make sense out of understanding our historical past. But the same way today when we could look at an Arab, and some of them look like us, but they got a certain kind of look that you know, nah, that's not a sister, that's not a brother. You know, they something else. Well, they knew that same thing in Europe. So when they said the Moors was African, they weren't mistaken. And one of the most credible historians in Europe wrote the book, Stanley Lane Coombe, the history of the story of the Moors in Spain. And so his family had written history for hundreds of years before he even wrote this book. So they had credibility for writing accurate history. So they couldn't challenge this book. And it's called The Story of the Moors in Spain. Now, what I'd like to do at this point is I would like to point out a few of the Moorish scientists that did work in Spain, in Moorish Spain. If I could have a second, because I want to find this quote. I don't want to misquote things. Okay. Now, this right here is the Saracens adopted the decimal system of numbers from mathematics of India. And this place notation was perfected by Muhammad bin Musa al-Khwarizmi in the 19th century. In the 9th century, I'm sorry. He also adopted zero as a mathematical quantity, wrote the first textbook on algebra, and was the author of a treatise of esoteric trigonometry. The medieval Muslim mathematicians solved quadratic and cubic equations in algebra. Now, there's a second one. Although Ferdinand Magellan has been credited for establishing the sphericity of the globe by circumnavigating it in 1519, Moorish educators taught geography from globe long before the time of Magellan. As cited by Lady Lugarth, the Moorish geographer Al Idris asserted during the 12th century that what results from the opinion of learned men and those skilled in observation of the heavenly body is that the world is round as a sphere of which the waters are adherent and maintained upon its surface by natural equilibrium. It is surrounded by air, and all created bodies are stable on its surfaces. The earth drawing to itself all that is heavy in the same way as a magnet attracts iron. Now, anybody with good sense know that that's a theory of gravity, and that's a theory of the fact that the world was round. So a lot of what has been learned by us about mathematics, about geography, about many different things, our ancestors, the Moors, had already, they were the ones that did that work. And they had the ability to redo work a lot of times. And like I told y'all earlier on, trying to compress all of the Moorish accomplishments is amazing, and it's a lot of work. Now, I want to begin to close out by the fall of the Moorish Empire. The fall of the Moorish Empire came as a result that the Arabs helped out the Europeans, and they eventually defeated the Moors and got us out of Spain and Portugal. We got on bad terms with the Arabs because we was accomplishing more than what they were. And so they got jealous and got upset with us, and we ended up warring with ourselves. Now, I want to quickly mention two dynasties that came after Umayyad, which is the Almoravids. Which the Almoravids held on to Spain and Portugal for about 100 years. But the ones that really did a lot of the scientific work, the real glamour, was the Almohades. The Almohades was a greater fighting force. They were able to come in, and they was really able to establish a stable government there, a stable structure. I'm not going to say government, a stable structure that lasted for 400 or 500 years. And so after the fall of the Moorish Empire, we were sold first by the Arabs, and we were sold for our skills, for what we could do, because many of us were mathematicians and doctors, lawyers. We had a lot of skills that people could make good money off of us. Now, if you notice, in the beginning, the first people to become involved with the slave trade was Spain and Portugal. They were the people who knew us. They had been around us all this time, so they knew our skills, especially our building skills, which has helped build this country right here. Now, I'm going to try to rush because I want to get to, you know, the question and answer, and I want to give people time to do that. But I dealing with the enslavement period, it wasn't until the British, the English were the ones that, when they brought us over here, they took the slave trade to another level. And when they brought us over here, they were the ones that started using like the Willie Lynch type tactics. You know, you got to keep them being less than, because you can never let them know that they're the Moors. You can't let them know that. You got to separate the children, do whatever's necessary to keep them from passing their history and let them learn from us. And that's exactly what they did. And many of us still believe, you know, the hype about the jungle Africa. Because if they could keep you, if they could get you to believe that Africa was jungle, how could somebody create scientific stuff in a jungle environment when they should be worried about dealing with the animals and all that stuff? Well, let me let you know that your brothers and sisters on the continent are just as afraid of lions and tigers and bears as we are over here. And they did not live in no jungle, because human beings don't live in the jungle. They live in civilization. And so were the jungles there? Yeah, was the jungles there? Were there people who had to have encounters with lions and all? Yeah, of course. Some of that was over there. But that's not where the majority of the people live. The majority of the people live in cities, just like you do over here. But that's why they never show you a city environment in Africa on commercials or nothing. Think about it. The only time they show you Africa is with our little kids and parents with big stomachs and flies all over us and all of that. They show you the worst condition in Africa. The only time you seen some prideful Africa was on Coming to America and Black Panther. In those movies, they want to make sure that you understand that ain't real. Well, no, that's not true. There are places in Africa that are very prosperous. Every place, no, because it's been subjugated. People have taken it over and made sure that the people don't benefit from the lands that they stand on. So quite naturally, yeah, it's going to be some desperate situations over there, but by the same token, there are some prosperous areas over there as well. But we need to know that, you know. But I wanted to close out with something that I learned from a dear friend. We used to call him Kali. And Kali talked about, he had a master's degree, and he had taken a class on anthropology. And so what he was teaching us was, he said that every human, every racial group has a genetic blueprint. And he said in our genetic blueprint is creativity. Now, when you follow where the Moors, if you follow a trail of where the Moors were, you find a lot of creativity. So if we are not the Moors, why did so much creativity come to America? If you read the list of inventions by blacks and their inventors, and you see all of the inventions on that list, it's hard to find anything that doesn't exist in America that we didn't do. So how did the creativity come from Europe, go to Europe in Moorish Spain, was in Egypt, was in Carthage, was on the west coast of Africa, and then it winds up in America? That's not a coincidence. It's because it's the same people. Now, there's another half to the Moorish Empire, which is the part that's in the Americas. And I really don't have time to go into that today. I really wish that I could, but I don't. Now, there's one more thing I want to close. I'm going to close out on this, I promise. This is the Moors after Spain, because many Moors still, of our people, still lived in Spain. I mean, still lived in Europe. And so even though we scattered from Spain during the Spanish Inquisition, we still lived in different parts of Europe. And one of those parts was Russia. And one of our ancestors that did a great service to Russia is Alexander Pushkin, the father of Russian literature and apostle of freedom. To Alexander Pushkin belongs the unique distinction of welding together and elevating the great European language. Before his day, the Russian language was half-formed and disdained, being used chiefly by the enslaved serfs and the masses. The educated and the elite spoke. When a Russian uses his language, he is more indebted to Alexander Pushkin than Anglo-Saxons are to Shakespeare. I think that that's a hell of a statement to make, that they are more indebted to Alexander Pushkin than the Anglo-Saxons are to Shakespeare. That's their greatest writer. Shakespeare and his group rewrote the Bible for them, translated the Bible from Greek, or either it was Greek or Jewish. He translated the Bible for them in the 1600s. So that wasn't like an easy job. And Shakespeare was a highly regarded writer in their world. And for someone to say that the Russians owe Alexander Pushkin, which was a black man, gave them their language and their culture. And so where do you think that language and culture came from? The base of it came from ours. And so that's one of the things that happened afterwards. You know, but Brother Marvin, I really thank you for allowing me to do what I could do today to try to educate our people to who we are in the world. And back to you, brother.
Brother George, thank you. Again, this is education, right? That's the E, right? And as you sit here and listen, Brother George is our resident scholar with the NAAEA. And once you sit down and begin to listen to the knowledge that this brother possesses, then you'll understand how rich he is. Right? I consider him to be a living genius, and he is so knowledgeable. He's helped me so much, like I said in the introduction. And to think about a brother who can share this rich knowledge, imagine if we had all an understanding of our history that's been taken away from many of us in so many ways. We have to understand that we have a rich history. And as Brother George mentioned, we have to learn and follow our genetic blueprint. When you talk about invention and creation, right, in spite of the degradation, right, in spite of the pain and the trauma and the drama that was enforced on us, we are incredible. And you got to know that. So, Brother George, if you don't mind, we're going to go to the lines and see if we can get some follow through and some just some talk back today. Again, 845-277-9250 is the number to call if you're not already on the line. Again, we're just trying to have a dialogue now, right? Brother George just gave you an introduction to the more. And I do want to say that the other part that you didn't mention, I want to see if we can come back to a follow-up segment where we talk about that as well. And then, as we all know, Dr. Bruce is going to come in and lay down a different layer, an additional layer to that. So tune in for that. Again, we're talking about the Moors today, an introduction to the Moors. We have a great history. We are descendants of the Moorish Empire. You got to know that, right? The African, the Black Moorish Empire, if I can say that, Brother George, with confidence. And let's go to the line. So we're going to start off with 5796, 5796. That's the last four of your number, 845-277-9250 if you want to talk to me, Brother George, or just have a comment or question. Here we go, 5796, you're on your live. Welcome to the show. Do you have a question, a comment, a statement? You there? I hear you. Come on, talk to me. All right, we're going to let you lay. We'll let you rest. At least you're listening. Thank you for listening. If you want to chime in again, 845-277-9250. That's a lot of information that come across our ears today, right? The Moors and Spain, the armies that we had. And again, we just have a great history. All right, let's go on over to 3347. 3347, you're up next. That's the last four of your number. Go on and talk to me today, and Brother George. 3347, you are next on the Empowerment Hour. Welcome to the show. 3347. Just listening? All right, no problem. I'm moving on down the line. Let's go to 9067. 9067, welcome to the show. Do you have a question, comment, statement? Where you calling from? 9067. They on the line. They don't want to talk to us today, Brother George, but that's all right. Keep listening. I'd rather for you to listen than talk. All right. Let's go to 0148. 0148. Do you have a question, comment, statement? Where you calling from today?
Calling 0148. Calling from Montgomery, Alabama. Good evening, Brother George and Brother Marvin. And Brother George, thank you for your presentation. The question that I have is, what information had you come across in your studies with Moors being involved with the Arab slave trade at all? And you got to promise us to give us a part two sometime soon.
Now, I've heard some of the Moorish Science Temple brothers talk about the Moors being involved with the Arab slave trade, with the white women and things of that nature. You know, see, slavery was a different thing in the Eastern world, I'm going to say, because slavery to us over here was chattel. It was your whole life. You were born into it and you died. Slavery in the medieval world and the ancient world was for a time period and was for usages. Now, right now you're talking about mostly like prostitution rings being set up and all that, which I don't doubt that those kind of things could have taken place because women were abused. And just like you said, the Arab slave trade, you know. So, you know, as far as like giving you detailed information about that, I really don't know extensively about that, but like I said, I have heard the some of the Moorish Science Temple brothers speak on that, and that's where they said that term dragon came from, because they used to swoop down and take the, you know, scoop the women up and keep on going on their horses, you know, but I heard it, you know, from what I heard, it was mostly dealing with the European women, you know.
Okay.
That's the best answer I can give you, brother.
That's all right. Well, you got to promise us a part two and part three later on, hopefully, and I'll make sure to tune in. Thank you. Peace and blessings, brother.
Well, I would like to get into the part that's in the Americas, because Dr. Okay. Ali Muhammad wrote an interesting book on that. He wrote a couple. And so it's a lot of documentation on our presence here, you know, before the Europeans even got here. But, yeah, thank you. Thank you, brother.
Buru, thank you.
All right. Thank you, brother, for your call. Now, let me ask you a quick question before we go to the next caller. You said in your statement, in your discussion, that we are the Moors. Can you clarify that statement for our audience, please, sir?
Things you have to like build a case and then deduce from what the case that you've built that it only makes logical sense. The ships that the Europeans actually know who we are more than I would ever know, because they're the ones that kept the ships logged. They know exactly where they went in Africa to get their slaves. And it was West Africa. West Africa was where Songhai, Mali, and the Ghanaian empires existed. That is where the Almoravids and the Almohades came from. All of those different groups came from West Africa. Northwest Africa, that whole corner there, that whole, the Songhai Empire, it was actually the empire that Tariq was over. And it ran all the way from the Pyrenees Mountains down the west coast of Africa. And so if that is where they got their slaves from, they got Moors. That's what was there, is more. And that's exactly who we are. Look at the way we think. We're a scientific-minded people when we use our minds. When you look at the creativity of the United States, who built the culture? Who made the music? Who gave them a culture in America? Look at the culture and look at where its base comes from. It comes from us. So, you know, debates about that can range. Just like I said about the identity of the Moors, you know, like I think that is that we know the difference between an Arab and an African American. We know the difference between an Arab American and an African American. And when we were in Spain and Portugal, they knew the difference between an Arab and a Moor. They knew. That's why when Stanley Dane Poole wrote, he wrote in that book that the difference between when the Arabs was doing things and when the Moors was doing things. And Spain and Portugal was run much better under the Moors than it was under the Arabs. You see, so because, see, the Arabs were great admirers of the Greeks, right? And so that tells you something right there. The Greeks learned their information from the ancient Egyptians. So what the Arabs were learning was they were learning their own history. If they accepted who they really are, they was learning their own history from the Greeks, and that's what they were admiring. But guess what? When they got a lot of the information still wasn't fully translated. So guess who ended up translating the rest of the information into its proper form? The Moors did it. It was things that they just couldn't figure out, and the Moors had to figure it out. Why? Because it was ours in the first place. So it was easy for us to figure out the rest of it. You see, so, you know. Yeah, I hope that answers your question, brother.
I appreciate that, brother. Thank you again. We have a long, rich history that takes us in so many different directions. You got to do your work. If you're listening today, do your work, do your research, and see what you discover and uncover. Many of our historians, like Brother George knows and like Brother George is, have done the research, have done the study, has read the books, have done the work to bring you the information that you're listening to today. Let's go on over back to the lines, Brother George, to 9282. 9282, you're up next. Welcome to the show. How are you? Where are you calling from?
Good afternoon, brothers. And may peace be unto
you.
This is Brother Booker in Richmond.
Peace.
How is everybody doing today?
Hey,
yes,
brother. Brother Booker, doing fine.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you, Brother George, for the knowledge today. Really appreciate what you do, what Brother Marvin do, what we all are doing and trying to do in this world in which we live. I just want to add a couple quick things in what we're talking about in general when we're saying we're capturing the African mind. And Brother George alluded to a scientific we're scientists, we're scientific mind, and I want to expand on that and say a scientific mind is nothing but a godly mind.
Yeah.
It is being who you are. And that scientific mind, that godly mind, is based on logic and as old folks would say, your common sense. And then Brother Marvin, as you alluded to earlier in the program, we got to do it ourselves. It starts with each one of us individually, and finding the God in us. And so, you know, I decided that I'm just going to, like I said, characteristic of the one is being honest with yourself. We have to be honest with ourselves. And I decided I'm gonna do that. And when I talk, it's about nobody else. It's just myself, being honest with me. And when I'm being honest with myself, and I decided to use what they call in journalism the KISS process, which is keep it simple, stupid. Let's not overdo this thing. Let's just analyze the data and what's right in front of us. That's that scientific speak, that godly speak, analyzing data, which you can look at and review and research and study and come to a logical conclusion of what the truth is. And, for example, if I'm being honest with myself, looking at the data, the world in which I live in, my people hate ourselves. Mm. We kill each other. We abuse each other. We make babies we don't take care of, nor do we know how to. We cheat on each other. Mm. We lie to each other. We don't respect each other, meaning we don't respect ourselves. And more importantly, we don't know ourselves. Hence, that's why we do the things I just mentioned. You know? And again, I'm saying I'm being honest with myself. I'm not talking about anybody else. I'm being honest with myself, my world. You know, I'm not involving anybody else in this. When I look further at that, I've been taught in this world in which I live in, that I have to die before I can meet my daddy, before I can meet my father, before I can meet my creator, before I can meet God. I have to die to do that, okay? Now, if I'm being honest with myself and using my logic and using my common sense, then I have to ask myself a question. The first question I'm going to have to ask myself logically is, who is telling me this? That I have to die to meet my father, to meet my God, to meet my creator, and that's the only way I'm going to see him. Who is telling me this? Then the answer is, I mean, logically, it's the white man who has told me this. It's my slave master or my former slave master who's telling me this, that I have to die before I see my father. He's the one telling me this. You know, and he also telling me that he hasn't met God, my father, my creator, but he's met a couple of his representatives. He's had conversations with some people that representing my father, my creator, my God. And they call disciples and prophets, you know. In fact, he's telling me, in fact, they've given him enough information so he can comprise a book that I can study to learn about my daddy before I meet him. And that book gonna make sure I meet him, because if I deviate from some of the things in the book, I may not meet my daddy even when I die. You know, so I'm being taught how I can meet my daddy in death, but I can't meet it until I die. Okay? And that's why they put these prophets or disciples' names on the books, even though they know those folk didn't write those books, but they said they told them that, so that's why they put their names on them. Now, to cut this kind of short today, for me, I say, I'm not talking to anybody else. I'm talking about myself. I'm analyzing the data myself. Now, me using my common sense, my logic, that's enough for me to know it's not true or it's a lie. And you may ask, well, what proof do I have? Well, the proof that I have is my common sense, my logic. I've been told this by the man who enslaved me and my people, the same man who raped my women and my children and put us in bondage, the same man who separated me from my family, taking me from my wife and my children, the same man who took my name from me, my culture from me, my language from me, my land from me.
All right,
God,
brother. All right. I got to do it.
Know?
I got to do it. I got to do
just,
it.
I know.
Love you, brother. I
got
to cut
brother.
You short because I got a couple of more calls, but thank you for listening,
brother.
And thank you always for your feedback. All right, let's
thank
go down
you,
before we transition over. Thank you, brother. Brother George, we got another call on the line. I want to get to that, and then we'll begin to wrap up. We got about 6 minutes left. So let's go down to 0288. Thank you, brother. 0288, do you have a question or comment? Or where are you calling from?
Hotep, my brother.
Hey, Hotep, my brother. How are you?
I'm all right. I haven't heard too much of the program. I got the advertisement about saying about the Moors, the brother George. I didn't hear him. Did he mention the Moors lecture that I did in Richmond, Virginia for him years ago?
No, this is Dr. But Bruce. You don't call me from a mysterious number. All right. Dr. Bruce is on the line. All right, I didn't see it. I'm looking at the deck, not the text. All right,
I just thought I'd give you a call because I'm out of town. But the Moors, I know he talked about Tariq in 711 A.D. who went in and civilized Spain and Portugal and went all the way up to France and Germany.
Yes, sir.
What happened to our brother Dr. Rogers today?
He could.
Dr. Rogers had an engagement that he couldn't make. Go ahead, Brother George.
Okay. Anything you want me to, anything, Brother George, since I don't know what you're talking about, anything you want me to kind of clear up or chime in on for the last couple of minutes?
I would like for you to chime in and do a part two because I did an introduction, you know, like when I speak on the Moors, I speak on the Moors in terms of politically, you know, in relationship to our mental condition. The actual, you know, names and history and all that, Dr. Bridges is much better at that than I am. That's one of my teachers as well, you know. But,
you didn't get into the fact that they built the cities of Cordova, Granada and Seville, and Europeans were not even bathing until black folk took in the use of the common bath into Spain and Portugal and built the first libraries and colleges and all the institutions. You didn't get into all that.
Say that again.
Now this is what I want to say about that. When I, Dr. Bridges, when I realized that once I had laid a lot of groundwork to establish our people having the thinking capacity, and just laying the groundwork before I even got into Tariq, going into Europe, I looked at the clock and my time was running low. So I had more that I wanted to say. I mean, our history is so rich, but hopefully, you know.
All right, we got an echo in there.
Yeah, you got an echo. Okay. I don't think it's mine, though.
Okay.
But anyway, Brother George,
right.
No problem. I just wanted to call and holler at y'all and just mention that these people called the Moors was just another name for black. And many of our people who came over here on slave ships were Moorish people and had Muslim names coming to America. And those same Moors that we're talking about also crossed the English Channel and went into England and Scotland and Ireland and Wales and built those kingdoms and castles and civilizations there also, you see.
Now, you're going to have to get into that in part two.
All right, we'll talk. Go ahead and show us about over.
All right. Okay. Well, if you're just joining us, Brother George just gave us a great introduction on the Moors, and Dr. Bruce is going to commit to following up on that. Now, before we end, we got about 3 good minutes left. And something that you mentioned, Brother George, and I want you to wrap it up with this if you don't mind. I want to go to the fall,
yes, sir.
Right? And I want to mention that we have no friends on this earth. Everybody has turned against us, and we got to depend on each other. So let's wrap it up on that, the fall of our empire.
Well, the fall of our empire, like I said, was the Arabs grouped up with the Europeans, and they have been trying to defeat us for a long time anyway. We was there for 800 years. And so once we fell, it didn't stop our impact on the scientific world. And that's why I read the thing on Alexander Pushkin, because we still made significant contributions to human civilization even after that. And like even while we were enslaved, which a part of the fall is over here. And so when you look at the contributions to medicine, all of that, I mean, we are an amazing people, brother. But like I said, Dr. Bridges, he can get into the historical and the names and all of that when he does the segment he does. Mine was just an introduction to kind of lay some groundwork so that you can listen, you know, to someone talk extensively about the Moors.
All right, Brother George, thank you so much. Excellent job today. Again, you got to know your history, right? And if you understand who you are, Brother George laid it down. Go look up Alexander Pushkin and see what you find. Go look up the Moors in Spain and the accomplishments that they did. Go and look at the tariffs and the trades and how the Europeans had to pay taxes just to move their commerce across the waters. There's so much that we can learn. Join us. That's what African-American empowerment is all about. They took it away from us, but we're the ones that can give it back to us if we just simply try to learn, grow, educate ourselves, change, and become the great, mighty people that we've been born to be. It's in your blood. It's in your ancestry. It's in your history, and it's in you. Continue to be the best person that you can be. Motivated, inspired, and empowered. This has been Empowerment Saturday, African American Empowerment Saturday. Peace and blessings. Y'all tell somebody about the show and stop acting funny. I'll talk to y'all next week. Peace. Thank you, Brother George. Great job.
Yes, sir. Peace. Thank you.
Oh, yeah.